This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Yeah, Frank here. He's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling.
That's what she said!
So why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Lynch's collection there.
Oz went on to star in America Pie, of course, as the crossfire. Bismarck. No, wasn't it Bismarck? Wasn't
Lizmark.
Lizmark. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hear Shock Wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation. Let me know what
you're our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richer.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live this Wednesday evening inside the PTV Man Cave, and it is time for headlines. Headlines. Something we used to do weekly, now we just do monthly. And it's always a big deal when we get there, because it feels like it's been forever since the last time. So, let's bring in my PIC, Mr. Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, PTB Nation. Welcome to episode 276. Of the Place to Be podcast, and it is true, JR, we don't do the weekly cornucopia fun and games. We usually now do it monthly, and a decent amount to talk about. We are coming to the end of the year. Mm-hmm. We have the final pay-per-view of 2013 this Sunday from H-Town, and a couple of big shows in the month of December spread out amongst other promotions.
And H-Town is Helena, Montana, correct?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. It's going to be in the volcano. It's going to be called Vesuvius, Ladders, and... hikers. The winner gets thrown into
awful.
The
you would bomb on those landings anyway. Greg Proops would take his glasses off and cry. Dear Greg, poor improv.
Sounds like you said Greg Poops.
He'd poops too.
Yes, I would.
Speaking of poop, we have a special guest with us here tonight, Scott.
Yes, guy who espouses a lot of it.
And you know that laugh. Joining us for the full headline show tonight, PTB Nations. PlaceToBeNation.com's star writer on the rise here.
That's right.
Our diamond in the rough. That is Place to Be Nation, and that is the one and only, the great Mr. Andrew Riesch. Andrew, welcome back.
Oh, thanks for bringing me back. So now the Justin and Scott portion of the show is over.
Yep, I'm going.
So everybody who's a fan of Place to Be, you can turn it off now. It's just me from now on.
It's just a Riesch show.
It's just a Riesch show.
That's what the website's become, too. It's funny, you know, you not only take it over the podcast, you take it over the website. It's a Riesch mania running wild.
When the pay-per-views pop up, I always get like some kind of an idea with the wrestling, and I say, okay, I want to do something kind of feature-esque, and I did one this week, and I'm always on the basketball, and then me and Scott got together about something a month ago that turned into a smorgasbord of college football that I didn't even imagine until I actually realized it. But now it's coming all together this last month of the year, and it's just been insane.
I've never seen Scott work so hard, Riesch. I don't know what buttons you're pushing, but I'm going to need a tutorial on how to get this guy motivated, because you've got him just the sweat, the smoke coming off the keyboard. It's unreal. It's like he had a visit from God himself and told him what's going
on. He wrote five sentences.
That's amazing. That's a lot for him.
Yep. Five, but they were long sentences, and I changed history with my comments, unlike you guys who were just.
Oh yeah, he's I don't want to spoil it too much, but it involves the BCS, And we're going to get to that later, but he's basically Biff with his sports almanac. He's from the future, and he wants to fix it. Instead of being in the moment and having to be forced to take
what you have. Which is funny, because of everyone on the website, he's got the least amount of years left, so it's kind of surprising.
I defixed it. That's right.
You defixed
it. Defixed it. Not fixed it. Defixed it.
Those are principles you could apply to a lot of other areas, Mr. Criscola.
All right. I'm going. All right, Risha, talk about something. I'll be back in 3 hours. Goodbye.
Anyway. All right. Headlines. Yes, Mr. Risha with us here. And Mr. Risha, you were one of our original guests, you know, back in the day. This was like... I think he was, what, just after Rotella? Was Risha's second guest we ever had? I believe he was.
One of our topics was WrestleMania 6, because that was your show, for your first one, Justin.
That's right. We talked about that.
So we talked about it all the time, and how me and Scott almost had a freaking, like a belly fight over over WrestleMania 3.
Oh, that's right.
And that was one of my topics in the article I wrote. It was about WrestleMania 6 and how much I loved it, and how a year later... we almost had a unification that never happened, you know.
And now we'll see if we get one that will or won't happen again. So that's a good segue, because as Scott mentioned, from Helena, Montana, we have this Sunday, Tables, Ladders, and Chairs pay-per-view, TLC. Kind of a unique card. Right now we have, according to WWE.com, we have 6 matches.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a tweet out there today that there was a tag match added. I don't know,
yes,
either of you guys catch that? Okay.
Yep.
They don't have it on the website yet.
So. Yeah, it's a fatal four-way for the titles.
All right, well, let's start with the pregame.
Okay.
And then we'll get into the tag match there. Pregame, we have Dolph Ziggler and Fandango. Scott, it seems like this thing got ignited on Raw. Why don't you give us just a quick briefer on what happened there?
Well, Fandango actually opened the show, and he took on and lost to Daniel Bryan. He actually changed up his gear. He had like the fluffy purple shirt, but it came up on Raw, I don't know, about halfway through the show that he will be taking on Dolph Ziggler. And I was a little disappointed at first. I feel like, you know, what has happened to this guy in the last 6 months? But he's on some form of show. And,
yeah, he's been on the pre-show the last few times now, it seems like, and the wheels have apparently come off the Ziggler bus as far as any kind of push. Andrew, do you think, what do you think the reason is? And B, do you think this guy's going to get a rejuvenation in 2014, or do you think he's kind of peaked at this point?
Which one are you talking about?
Dolph.
Well, John Cena got a nice little compliment in there, but then again, I mean, we've seen John Cena try to push guys like Zack Ryder and guys like that. The one thing I'll always give John Cena is that he was always willing to give back, and that was kind of one of the messages in that last segment that Scott reviewed on the on his recap. And I don't know. With Dolph, he got his chance, and I don't want to say he blew it, but the concussion really curtailed him, and it's just hard to get that momentum back. It just seems to me like Dolph needs either a change in character or he needs another real big feud that he can really carry himself with, you know. Even something like with The Miz and Kofi Kingston, something that he can sink his teeth into. He hasn't really had anything like that since he lost the belt.
And I feel like they had him with AJ, which I thought was going to be the move that got him over, like almost like Edge and Lita. Yeah, they kind of botched it. They didn't really. I think AJ got too big too fast, honestly. Whereas when Lita was with Edge, she was getting more popular, but she was still kind of on his level. AJ kind of surpassed Dolph at that point, and I think that hurt him. I never thought he'd be worse off without Vicky, but it's kind of been that
way.
Well,
not only that, Lita never turned on Edge.
Right.
Lita walked out of the WWE, and Edge continued.
But I'm saying even during the time she was with Edge, because, I mean, she was with Edge for a while. And maybe they were thinking of keeping AJ and Dolph together for a while, but AJ started out popping him. Do you agree with that, Scott? Or
it's pretty close. And I think, sadly, I think the Bizarro Izod crowd is what really hurt him, because they really wanted him to win, cashing the Money in the Bank. They took on a tepid, although hardworking, Alberto Del Rio, and I think the organic face turn actually worked to his disadvantage, because, he wasn't quite at that level yet. He was still trying to act like a heel, but he was getting face pops. And AJ still was the cool heel, so Dolph got lapped because he needed to act differently. And I don't think he was ready to act differently. So yeah, I do think that's a big reason why I think he was kind of left high and dry in terms of the pops he got from the crowd. And then getting hurt didn't help matters either. I think that's the worst part. That,
oh, that
8-week concussion he got. Yeah.
That definitely killed some of the momentum we had. All right, Scott, who do you like in this one?
I think Dolph's going to win, though. I do think he's going to win. Because Fandango's just there. He's not quite at that. He's not ready to get a big charge or anything yet, and a loss isn't going to kill him. So I'll take Dolph.
I agree. I think they seem to always go with the face in these pre-show matches, unless there's a title on the line or something like that. But I'll take Dolph here, too. How about you, Andrew?
I'll do a 180 and I'll say Fandango just to continue that with Summer Rae. It seems like Summer Rae is getting a lot more TV time than I noticed in the last few months. Probably because she's the most charismatic of all the women outside of AJ Lee.
It's almost happening to Fandango what happened to Dolph. I feel like Fandango's being pseudo forgotten.
Summer Rae's starting to supersede.
Summer Rae's starting to get it. Yeah.
I think the best thing for Fandango was kind of a deep push though in a way. I feel like they were going too hard with him and trying to really shove the whole thing down our throats. I kind of like that. They took the pedal up a little bit, and they realized they went too hard with him with the Jericho stuff right out of the gate. And it made sense, the Jericho feud, so I could see why they tried to do it. But I kind of like that in the second half of the year here. They've kind of pumped the brakes and said, all right, let's get this guy just reestablished and then maybe push him again. So I kind of like what they've done with him. All right, Scott, what is that tag match? Why don't we start with that one, the Fatal 4-Way
that
was added?
It's a Fatal 4-Way for the tag team championships. The teams are, of course, I go to Bigelow 34, and of course LaRue doesn't have it there. Big shock. It is Cody and Goldust defending the titles against the Real Americans, Ray and Big Show.
It's random.
I know. And
the Usos, I believe, for the fourth.
I think it is the Usos. Yeah.
I think Goldust and Cody retain. I mean, there's too much going for them right now to have them losing this match. I think they're going to lose to a more established team. Ray Big Show is interesting, though. The fact that they're putting them together in this match makes me think either they may win or they may feud. I don't think we're ready for another Big Show heel turn, though, so maybe they won't feud. The Usos have been pretty hot lately, too, but again, I think it's just at some point it may be their time. It's just still not there yet. And the fourth team, the Real Americans. I think a Cesaro face turn's coming, so I don't think they win because I think they're going to split soon. And I think they want to push Cesaro. What do you think, Rich?
The Real Americans are getting a nice little push on TV for the last month or so. I think you're right, though. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that they see a lot of money in Cesaro. I think what really launched it with Cesaro was that match he had with Daniel Bryan on Raw, where they realized not only is this guy really entertaining and he's got the I don't know the name of the move when he just dizzies up his opponent. He's just an airplane spin.
Yeah, a giant swing.
It just got over really big, but he also proved he can go in the ring. And I think they like him and they want to push that tag team as much as possible until they can break it so that Cesaro can at least get as much mid-card status as he can. And I don't think they're going to wind up winning the belts. Like I said, like you said, Justin, I think it's just a ploy to get Cesaro over once he goes single. So I'd say Cody and Goldust are just going to continue into the new year with the belt.
All right, Scott, who do you like in this one?
I'm going to do a 180, but I'm kind of going to use JR's philosophy because of it. I actually think the Real Americans are going to win the titles here. I think they're going to pin one of the Usos. This is a way for Cody and Goldust to kind of maybe chase the titles for a little bit without getting pinned. Jay or Jimmy could get pinned. And I think Cesaro and Swagger will be rewarded for Cesaro's pops by being the champs for a little while. And, they could have until a Rumble or something, and then maybe Cody and Goldust win it back. But I think now's a good time to be able to siphon the titles to a heel without Cody or Goldust getting pinned. So I think the Real Americans have earned their chance, and I think they win the tag titles on Sunday.
Wow, I don't know. I feel like Goldust and Cody have more to do with those belts. But it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, December pay-per-view has always kind of been a little haven for those multi-man random tag team title changes, it feels like.
I know they're not in the show, but do you think the Bloom's already off the rose with Los Matadores?
I don't know if the Bloom was ever on the rose.
Was there ever a rose anyway? I mean,
the tulip was there in the beginning, but that was about it. No Bloom.
Dandelion.
Wayne Bloom had more Bloom than the
Bloom. Jeremy Bloom.
Yeah, I don't know the Matador. I don't know if they were ever meant to be anything legitimate other than just kind of lower mid card tag.
So it's already over for them.
Yeah,
I don't know if there's ever a plan for them to be much. I feel like they're realizing their ceiling right now. And
when you're stuck to having to pimp the shop.com stuff on Raw, you've sunk pretty low.
Well, it's funny too because the tag division has been so blah for however many years now. And right when it's kind of getting good, they get this gimmick and get inserted into the situation. But this is maybe probably the best the tag division's been in a while, right?
A lot of teams.
And you know who's coming. And you know who's coming. It's Davey and Eddie.
Possibly, right?
And maybe even Ascension could be coming too. So.
Connor O'Brien, yeah.
And it seems like, you know, Triple H is, we've always heard the focus is there, so. And now he has more power. We'll see if that comes to fruition. So, all right, let's take a look at the Divas title match, and that is AJ Lee defending against Natalya. More total Divas. Let's clarify, Scott. Total Divas versus regular Diva here.
Yep. Real Divas.
Very clear. Very clear on this. Mm-hmm. AJ Lee, I don't think the title reign ends here. Even though Natalya seems to be getting a push, she looked pretty dominant on Raw. Total Divas, the season ended. So it's like they have the show to push right now. I don't really see the point unless they're going to start filming season three and they kick it off with her winning here, which is possible. I think AJ, I think something bigger is coming for her to lose this belt. So once again, I'll ride AJ.
I'm sure you will.
To another win. I'm sure. All right, Scott, who do you like here?
I like AJ too, because the total diva, Natalya. I think
total diva.
The total diva, Natalya. I think she'll she's hot now, but AJ, the real diva, is just too amazing right now. Even though she hasn't really wrestled much the last couple weeks, she's kind of been seconding Tamina Snuka. Maybe she's injured or something, but she's just too good to lose now. As much as Natalya is the first legit babyface competitor since Caitlyn, but I think AJ's still in a role. And the real diva.
Clarify?
Real diva.
Okay, thank you.
Defeats the total diva, Natalya.
All right, Andrew, who do you like?
Well, if you go by WWE Booking 101, Natalya got the win Monday. So that means AJ gets the win at the pay-per-view. So I'll just go with AJ. I will say that for casuals, the total diva's popularity, it's a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it in the internet. I've seen it even with my family. I was at Thanksgiving and
in the internet, huh?
I'm in the internet. I'm like Johnny Mnemonic.
That's
or that weird Coke guy from the 80s.
That's like Al Gore level shit. You're just inside the whole internet.
I'm inside,
surrounded by it,
crawling around.
He's penetrated the internet.
But I was talking to my sister-in-law, and she watches Total Divas. I was like, This lady, she's never watched wrestling in her life. So the E stuff is real. They do have immense popularity among people that don't watch wrestling at all.
My favorite part is Jen Engel has probably not ever seen any wrestling besides when I used to kind of talk to her during Raw like 15 years ago on, God, it might have been like ICQ or some shit we were talking.
God.
And
Reese was climbing in there too.
So it's funny, the only wrestlers she knows are like the six divas and then John Cena and Daniel Bryan and Fandango, who've been on been on Total Divas. So yeah. This is funny to hear her comment like on the staff page and everything else about like JoJo. JoJo's like the most famous wrestler to her in the world. Just because this is all she knows. But it's true. I mean, it is popular. It is doing well. Obviously, it was renewed. And I honestly, I'll watch anything. For some reason, I just did not get in early on this, and I feel like just by reading the recaps, I've kind of stayed with it. At some point, I'll probably have to go back and
Ben and Jen's recaps are hilarious.
And they are thorough, so I pretty much get the feel of the whole episode. I don't feel like they leave much out, and they're very good, because I like the perspective where Ben is a diehard diva lover, and Jen has no idea what the fuck she's talking about. So it's really, really good dichotomy there. But seems like we're all in agreement with AJ. I'm guessing that's where you're going, Andrew. Oh, yeah, you said because Natalya won on Raw.
AJ, yeah.
All right, IC title on the line. The plummeting Damian Sandow challenges Big E Langston. I feel like Sandow really needs a win here. Bad. But I can't see them taking the belt off Big E just yet. I feel like another guy they have plans for heading into 2014. When he does lose, I think it'll be someone with a little bit more of a rocket attached to them. And Rich, let me ask you this, because Scott and I talked about this on our last headlines. What is the issue with Sandow? Why do you think they're not getting behind this guy? He's got the size, got the look, got the promo skills, got the in-ring ability, got some charisma, and he's homegrown. What is holding them back with him?
Man, this is nitpicky, but I think one might be his age. I think he's in his 30s, right?
Yeah, but I mean, that hasn't stopped
before. I know he's relatively young. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's a really nitpicky tidbit, unless Vince really goes, well, The other thing is, he doesn't look like a really intimidating wrestler. He looks like, he looks to, in Vince's eyes, like not like a monster, like the Viper. He just looks like the genius circa 2013. And I guess he just doesn't want to get behind a guy that looks like an intellectual scholar. He would rather go with a guy that looks like a world-beating. Even Daniel Bryan at his size, he looks like a badass. And I don't know if Sandow exerts that as much as the other guys. I mean, that's just really nitpicky. I love Damian Sandow. I'm just trying to get into Vince McMahon's messed up brain to figure out why he doesn't like Damian Sandow. Because that's really where it's at the end of the day. You know, what does he like? Does he think he could have been the champion, cashed in, and beat Cena the next night? He obviously didn't. Because he wasted it. That was the first wasted Money in the Bank briefcase since, I mean, John Cena lost it. But then, I mean, John Cena's got enough clout. For Sandow, he needed that win, right, and he didn't get it.
Yeah, I don't know. it's weird. It is weird. Maybe you're right. Maybe it's the character that's hamstrung him. Even though it's a good character, it's one that's stood the test of time.
One.
The only thing I think of is that they just kind of abuse him because he's just always been there, and maybe they figure he'll be around for a while and they'll get to him eventually. But he seems like a layup or a slam dunk of someone that's in their wheelhouse, the type of guys they'd want to push just when you look at the whole package. Mm-hmm. Scott, who do you like in this match here?
Oh, I like Biggie Langston. It's clear that he's on their radar. You could tell he's a little nervous in his promo cutting skills. He talks a little too fast. He's been at the table with JBL and King and Michael the last 2 weeks in Sandow matches. And you could tell he's still trying to get the whole promo cutting thing down, but Vince gives guys like that, big dudes like that, the benefit of the doubt when they can't cut a promo.
Yeah. Biggie's promos are the perfect example of playing it tight.
Yeah, exactly. He's being very cut down the middle, mm-hmm. Very straightforward, babyface-ish, you know, very 80s sounding. And yeah, as much as Sandow needs a win, sadly, it ain't going to be here. I like Big E.
Agreed. Reesh?
Big E Langston. I mean, that's John Cena's guy. I mean, it's all innuendo what I'm saying, but I mean, since Cena came back, Big E Langston's been the Intercontinental Champion. I mean, he likes him. Vince thinks that John sees money in him, and they're going to push him.
All right. Final three matches here. And two of these matches have the same gimmick, and are kind of weird. So why don't we talk about them both at the same time?
Okay.
And then a CM Punk in a 3-on-1 handicap match with the Shield, and Daniel Bryan in a 3-on-1 handicap match with the Wyatt family. Now, the Wyatts and Bryan have a little bit more of a story behind it, where they've kidnapped him and tried to get him to join the family and see things their way, and they give him ultimatums, whereas the Shield's just beating the shit out of Punk, just gutting his face. let me ask you this, guys. I'll start with you, Scott. Do you think there's going to be some kind of unity between the Shield and the Wyatts? Do you think there's any crossover in this match? The way I maybe see things going is I think Punk helps Bryan and Bryan doesn't help Punk because he's kidnapped. Something weird is going to happen where one guy does something that the other guy doesn't, because I still think we're getting mega powers with these two. I still think we're going to get a split and they're going to fight down the road in feud. And I think a little bit of it happens here. I'm thinking Bryan wins his match, and I think Punk loses because I think they want Reigns to get the win. And something happens where Bryan doesn't make it in time to help Punk, and that leads to some little pissiness between the two as we go forward. What do you think, Scott?
I don't think that quite yet. I think that happens eventually. I don't think it happens here. I almost get the weird feeling they're gonna end up combining these two matches and make it a gigantic 6-on-2.
Yeah, I almost said that too. I could see that.
And this match could be a good 40 minutes, and I could see it turning into an elimination. As well, kind of like a Survivor Series almost. But that's just a theory. If these two stayed single matches, I have the heels win both. I don't even know why they did this. This is kind of silly booking. It really is. I don't understand what the whole point of either of these matches are. Just to beat the shit out of them? You can do this on Raw. In pay-per-view, you need what I'd like
to. Well, that's why I think there's something more there. I think it's something more is going to happen than just two matches. I feel like there's going to be some threaded storyline between the two, and we're probably going to get something with Bryan and the Wyatts being abducted. Something has to go down. they've been teasing too much. You think Heyman gets involved in this at all? I mean, we heard the devil tease back before Hell in a Cell. We haven't really seen much payoff to it. You think anything goes on there?
Possibly, because, I mean, the unfortunate thing about Bray Wyatt's promos is, as great as they are, sometimes you really do have to listen to understand them. And he has been kind of saying things like, you know, I was told that this would be easy, and or I was, you know, he seems to always be referring to a separate entity. So there is a possibility Heyman is involved. I don't know if they just wanted to bury that with Punk. I really haven't seen Heyman since, so I'm not exactly sure. But the heels, I think, win both here. Punk's already, I think that's why that when Punk said in his promo on Raw, you know, I know I'm going down, but I'm taking them all down with me. So I think that's pretty much him saying to the fans, don't get mad that if I lose, because I probably should, but I'll make it worth your while, kind of thing. That's just straight up fighting. But I agree with you, JR, and I'm curious what you think, Reesh, that the Daniel Bryan Wyatt's thing, yeah, has more threading. That's a good way to put it, JR. There's more threading going on there in a story than the Punk Shield one. So, but I think both three-man teams win in some capacity.
I agree with Scott. And I actually will go a little bit to the opposite of what Justin was thinking. I don't think they're going to combine the Punk Bryan kind of indie, I guess Scott Keith called it indie powers kind of concept that they're going with, where they're going to bump into each other wrestling. I think they're kind of going to go the opposite way. I think we got Punk where he's going to get into this feud with the Shield that they're going to segment into something involving the Authority, because the Shield are the glad hands to Triple H. And that will be an angle that goes into the Royal Rumble, where it will be the Shield's job to make sure CM Punk doesn't win the Royal Rumble, even though Triple H is hands-off saying, I have nothing to do with it. And with Bryan, I think it's just going to continue a feud with Bray Wyatt. They need the win after losing at Survivor Series just to strengthen up Bray Wyatt going into the new year. And I think that the two clans are both going to win, and it won't make Bryan and Punk look bad because you lost to three other guys. So it's okay. And those guys are so strong with the fans being behind them that a loss won't hurt them, especially in a show like this.
What do you think, Jer?
I think Bryan wins and Punk loses. And that's only because I think they want Reigns to get the win.
Okay.
And I think I can't see them both losing. I can't see them both winning. So I think if I look at the other teams, I feel like Reigns is the one guy most likely to get a win. So.
Okay.
And Punk piles up an abysmal pay-per-view record on the year. He's gotten better as of late, but.
It would be a little somber if you had a show where the Wyatts won, the Shield wins, and Randy Orton wins. But that might be what happens.
All right, well, let's get to that match now. We'll see if that is what you think will happen. And that is the World Heavyweight Champion versus the WWE Champion in a TLC match. Unification on the line. John Cena, Randy Orton. I like that this is the only TLC match. I think it really puts an emphasis on the gimmick that it's only on this huge match and nothing else on the show. Let me ask you guys this. We'll start with you, Reesh. Does the unification actually happen? And if so, who will be the unified champion?
It will definitely happen. They would not have put this much marketing into the entire idea of it if they were just going to cut bait and just go back to having both titles. I think they are determined to drop the World Heavyweight Championship, which is what is going to visually disappear from television, and have an undisputed WWE champion. So the answer to that first question is yes. I think Randy Orton will win because he needs it just a little bit more than John Cena does. Because John Cena can recover from that loss in a match like this a little more than Randy Orton can. And the angle that you saw the last 2 weeks kind of spells that story, that the last thing Randy Orton needs is an excuse for not winning, because it would really make him look bad. So I think that to keep him strong going into the Royal Rumble, they're going to have Orton win this unification match, and then we'll have a rematch at the Royal Rumble.
I keep going back and forth on this one. I feel like Orton's going to win because of the whole, you know, Triple H is going to make it happen. But if you read some of the backstage kind of jitterbug going on, kind of the scuttlebutt, mm-hmm. It sounds like they're hesitant with Orton again. They were a little bit pissed at him, or he was throwing a temper tantrum backstage. Seems like there was a lot of strife after that segment on Monday night. I don't know if it's all legit or
well,
not.
Well, Cena and Orton in real life have been best friends for a long, long time. I don't know if they're still close, but I don't want to say that Cena took liberties, but there were a few things he pointed out in some of his segments with him that it hit a little bit close. Kind of like when you remember when Shawn had his thing with Hulk Hogan, where it was just like, ooh, that was a little bit, that had a little sting to it, you know? So I don't know if that was something that they worked out together in the bullet points to make sure nobody's feelings were hurt or.
All right, well, here's the story. Here's the story from WrestleManiacs. Now, I don't know if this is true. We're not putting much credence, but here we go. Source backstage at Raw Monday Night in Seattle has revealed there's some incredible turmoil as a result of the main event segment. Apparently, top management figures in the company were very upset over the crowd reaction during the Ascension segment, featuring many past and current WWE World Champions. They closed out the show. While WWE expected Daniel Bryan to be more over than usual due to his Washington-based roots, they were caught off guard by the way the crowd hijacked the final segment, one that was described as the final hard sell for the pay-per-view. There's said to also be backstage heat on several guys, including John Cena and CM Punk. Punk and Randy Orton apparently had words, while Cena was in trouble for going completely off script during his promo on Orton. Orton was extremely pissed and threw a fit backstage, and things are not looking good. It was completely out of control into the gorilla position immediately after the show went off the air. This is obviously a result of Cena's harsh comments towards him during the go-home promo. And additionally, Hall of Famer Bret Hart was upset, of course, at the Montreal Screwjob reference by Orton. While Orton's comments about the infamous Screwjob were scripted, Hart was not informed ahead of time that they were coming. Now, who knows, again, if this is anything legit. I'm curious about the line that is that said, things are not good, not looking good. I don't know what that means.
No.
At the end of the day, I look at it and I say, for years to come, they're going to be saying so-and-so was the unified champion, right?
The last world heavyweight champion.
Right, or no, I'm saying the first unified. Like we got Jericho, you know, the first unified champion.
Okay, I see.
The torchbearer. I cannot see them not making it John Cena. I don't think they have faith in Orton just to be around long-term because he's probably prone to fuck something up. And 20 years from now, 10 years from now, when they're looking back and they want to do a DVD on the Unified Championship, I feel like they want to start with John Cena. Like, John Cena is their guy to be the Unified Champion. And the reason I think that is because I don't think the end game at this year's Mania is Cena winning this title. So if he doesn't win it now, and he's probably not going to win it at Mania, does he really not hold it? It's possible. I mean, the other angle is that they go with Bryan finally winning over Orton at Mania, but I don't feel like they're going that way. I still feel like we're going to get Bryan Punk at Mania. Scott, what are your thoughts here?
Well, first off, I'm really stunned at the way that the wording. I just noticed, I found an article on Lords of Pain kind of backing up what you were saying, JR. I am stunned that they're also almost making it sound like the crowd ruined the show. I mean, when you're saying the word hijack, WWE officials were not expecting the crowd to hijack the final. What the fuck do you expect? I mean, are they that dumb?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Just because they're in Seattle. All right, I get it. Yes, Daniel Bryan's it. But I mean, fucking seriously. This is their show, assholes. If it wasn't for them, you wouldn't be having a show. I don't know. The whole tone of these stories is really irritating me. Like, they're pissed off that the fans fucked him over by chanting for a guy that's not involved in. I mean, go fuck yourself. I mean, seriously. That irritates me. But in any event, I have to agree. I agree with you, JR. I think there's a sense of history. I don't want to say that WWE is going to regret not having WrestleMania 30 up here. No offense to the wonderful city of New Orleans, Mr. Reach.
Here we go.
But I almost think that they might have needed to flip-flop these and have 29 at the Superdome and have 30. That'll bug them because they're very into stats and history and stuff, and I have a feeling that's going to bug them. Now, is 30 going to be a great show? Yes. Is New Orleans going to be a great city? Come on, man. They hosted Final Fours, National Championship, Super Bowls. They know how to throw a party down there. But I agree with UJR that when it comes to brass tacks, if this unification is going to have any kind of weight to it in terms of history, it's got to have John Cena's face on it. And I gained a lot of respect for Cena over the last couple weeks. His promos have been good.
Yeah, the only reason you may think Orton is because they want to continue to push the Triple H thing. But I have another thought on that. But go ahead, finish.
But I don't think Orton. I don't think Orton's going to have the title at Wrestle. The only way you would have Orton win here is if he keeps it all the way to April 6th in the Dome, right. And that ain't happening. That's not happening.
Mr. Riche, what is your rebuttal to Scott's challenge about WrestleMania 30 should have been up here?
Well, it would have been as fun as the Super Bowl is going to be in about 2 months, where we're playing in a fucking blizzard like Good. We had in Philadelphia about 6 days ago.
Good.
I mean, who wants to play in a blizzard like we were going to? I mean, I don't know how we didn't have one with Rock Cena, too, you know. But
awesome.
I think that the Superdome is a great building. I was surprised it was selected for the 30th WrestleMania. I think it would have been a little bit more symbolic to have it in New York, given that it was the 30th one. But given timing and whatnot, if it wound up in the Superdome, that's great. I don't think it's going to make the show any worse. I just hope there's no power outage. That's the only thing I'm praying for. I'll be in the building, like, thinking, please don't let the power go out.
I love those McDonald's commercials now with Flacco and Kaepernick, the McDonald's.
Yeah, did you get the sauce? Yeah.
And
Larry Bird.
The thing, yeah. No, I mean, yeah. I look, Superdome is a... But now Vince has this thing now. He wants to beat Super Bowls to the buildings.
Mm-hmm. I mean, let's Vince go to Santa Clara now, yeah.
Vince is really losing it.
He lost it, buddy.
We all know what WrestleMania 31 is. 31 is he is chasing that NFL money. He's got the 49ers behind him, who are going to probably be Super Bowl contenders going into next year, just like they are this year. And he wants to get that NFL backing behind him going into WrestleMania.
That only goes 1 year, because if WrestleMania 32 is at yes. Pond, you want Super
Bowl. No chance. I don't
know, you're smoking right now. There ain't going to be no Super Bowls being chased in that city for a while. So
or maybe he just wants to resurrect the Demons, you know, get them into that new stadium, San Fran Demons.
Right.
Bring them back.
I love their logo. They were awesome. Just finishing up my comments. You're looking at it from a straight black and white booking perspective, Riche, and that's fine. I think they're looking a little more past that. And I don't think the title plans in your backyard on April 6th have Orton inked.
I agree with you there.
I don't think
what's that?
No, I was about to say, JR, I agree with you, though. Maybe Cena's not even inked. But I think... When it comes to brass tacks, when it comes to DVDs and history and the encyclopedia, our guy Brian Shields and the encyclopedia, when they see the first real, no offense to Chris Jericho, unification that they want to like pimp forever, I think they want John Cena's face on it.
I think part of it too is that Orton's going to leave this group, and I think that was the first tease we got. I think he blows this match, and Triple H gets in his face Monday, and Orton shoves him back, and they split. I think they're going to find a new... Golden Boy heading into Mania.
Can I have one little diatribe that I thought about?
You can have many diatribes.
You're the master of diatribes.
I love that last segment. It was perfectly choreographed. It teased WrestleMania and the Royal Rumble beyond belief for you to want to watch what's coming up in the next year. But I really despise the fact that Stephanie McMahon gets a pass now compared to 13 years ago, where she can be this mean, callous, manipulative bitch. But the moment she gets struck by anyone, it's Boohoo City. And I just couldn't stand that, because they build up Stephanie as this mean, callous person, but then they want to do it 50-50, where she's this authoritative figure who tries to play it straight and tries to keep things even. It's like, it's almost like the bookers can't make up their mind of what they want Stephanie to be. The one thing they don't want Stephanie to be is a woman who gets her comeuppance, because that's not PG anymore. And I just don't like the way that they did that on that last segment, where, oh, poor Stephanie. I'm like, oh, screw her.
I think the reason you have that on your mind, Riche, is because Cena was standing next to them at the end.
And right, normally it would have just maybe been Triple H concerned for his wife. But yeah, Cena kind of looking concerned was weird.
Yeah, it was kind of stupid. Yeah.
Did you take that as any hint of a Cena turn? I mean, is there any chance Cena becomes the corporate champion?
No.
Yes, the reluctant corporate champion.
No.
I think that's what it's going to be.
Oh, so he's going to be shackled? No, that didn't happen.
I think it's going to – well, to kind of clue in, it's off topic. But I think, you know, everyone's got their WrestleMania theories they're throwing out. Mine is Cena versus Punk. And I think they're going to try to do something to replicate what we saw with Austin Rock in Houston, Texas. I think we're going to see something kind of sort of similar.
Where Cena goes heel or Punk?
Huh?
Where Cena goes heel or Punk? Like, who's the Austin role?
I've thought about that a little bit.
Punk going with Triple H.
I'd say Punk turns.
Nah. You think Punk turns and goes to Triple H?
Yes.
Nah. I think there's more money in having Cena do that, but I still don't think he's turning either. I don't know. Who the hell knows where they're thinking? I mean, there's been so many chances to turn this guy over the years, and I get why they're reluctant, and I get why it probably won't ever happen. No. But again,
I think that Cena
is another golden opportunity.
I think that Cena thing standing next to them was one of their usual red herrings to make us all have the conversation we're having right now.
Yeah.
That's what I think it
but
is.
But I think Vince sees Cena Punk as it wouldn't be comparable, but it as the Austin Rock of today. It's the two most well-known guys in wrestling in the last 5 years.
And they haven't had a Mania match yet.
Yeah.
Punk
gets his main event.
Let me ask you this. Is there any chance Shawn Michaels wrestles at WrestleMania?
No way.
You
not a chance. And my friend Brad is so mad at me because I convinced him to go to WrestleMania because I told him that Shawn Michaels would be there.
Why do they?
I said, I don't think he'll wrestle. He's going to be there.
Why does he keep getting involved then? This teases. I didn't think he was going to either. And then after Monday, I'm starting to think again more. Maybe he will. But I think the only guy he will come back and fight is Brian. If we're not going to get that, then I don't think he does. I still think we get Brian Punk. Mega powers explode. I don't know where that leaves Cena. I just feel like that's what we're going to get.
It's possible. I would love to see Shawn Michaels wrestle Daniel Bryan. That would be a freaking dream come true.
I still think we might get Cena Taker. I feel like they're still leaning towards Taker Brock.
It is set. They're saving Paul Heyman for the Brock angle when he challenges The Undertaker. It just seems to me that's where it's headed.
And there's rumors, too, that Brock is going to win the Rumble, and they're finally going to do the thing where the Rumble winner challenges Taker.
Oh, cool.
Because don't forget, you're not going to have a title choice anymore. You know, the winner just goes to the title. So I could see Brock saying, you know, I've had a title. I don't care. I want to become immortal. I want to end the streak.
And what they can honestly do, and what the only thing that makes that build great is legitimately Taker has never beaten him. And that's a fact.
He never got his win back. You're right. Nope. He never got his win back.
0-2-1 in three.
The rumors were that he was going to have the job to Taker on SmackDown before he quit.
Right.
Yeah.
That was the rumor.
Well, it's a good thing they didn't, because then we have this. Yep. I should just clarify as well, we had it wrong. The fourth team in that match is not the Usos. It's actually Curtis Axel and Ryback.
Oh, okay.
Axel.
The heel team. All right. I still think that the real Americans win.
Yeah, I don't think it changes anything.
No.
All right. That is your TLC preview and predictions. Of course, you can get your predictions in. The final one of the year, place to be message board, bigelow34.proboards.com. Derek LaRue runs that. And after this wraps up, we'll start anew with the Rumble. And Scott, I'm thinking of I got to talk to Derek about maybe doing something a little bit more formal with this, with the podcast and the site. And we'll come up with something. There's going to be a better way to do it.
Yep.
Other than just on there, maybe with a prize at hand as well. So we'll talk about that. We'll have some time before the Rumble to get that in check. So, Mr. Reese, you have a couple big articles. That one's been posted and one's coming later this week. One is about, why don't you tell us? What are these two big articles that kind of play into the TLC main event?
Well, the first one that came out early this week, and I'm really, really happy with it. This one and the one I did about a couple months ago about Mid-South were probably my favorite ones to research and write about. And this one was the Real World's Champion. Now, it has tie-ins to the Cena-Orton TLC match in the terms of the fact that it's the title unification. It's sort of the dissolvement of the World Heavyweight Championship going forward. And I kind of bring it back to when the World Heavyweight Champion, which has the lineage of the NWA Championship, would come into the same crosshairs as the WWF and the WWWF Champion, that it just felt like it had more of a mythological appeal that people just were just always drooling to think of because they knew they would never see it. So when Ric Flair went to the WWF, I was about 9 years old, and it was just such a dream come true to think, oh my God, Ric Flair, he's in the WWF, he's going to wrestle the WWF champion Hulk Hogan like we always dreamed of in the 80s, and he's got the belt. He never lost the WCW champion. So basically, the WCW champion is going to wrestle Hulk Hogan. Oh, this is so great. But because of different factors and things that never came to be. We never really saw it. And it's just a story of how it's always bound to be a failure when you have two champions from different promotions try to try to come together and do a match like this, because you don't want to offend the other promoter and make the other wrestler look bad, or it's all under the control of one person and they can't make up their mind of who's going to be the champion and who's not. And once they make the decision, to steal another phrase, the bloom's off the rose. And you know, it's just sort of a callback to the Ultimate Warrior Hulk Hogan title versus title, even though that wasn't a world title, that was the Intercontinental belt, and how that appeal is gone. I mean, Justin, when you saw the Ultimate Challenge, did you feel like this was a true champion versus another true champion in a clash?
Yeah, because I felt like the IC belt had been elevated so high through the Warrior that he was like, that was almost like a second world title at that point, I thought. With the Warrior.
And it felt big. Like when you watched it.
Very big.
Yeah. Even the contract sign, which I did a link of it on the web, on the article that I wrote. Even as cheesy and stupid as it is, even the fact that they have camera angles that don't exist, you know, it's like you must have been a little bit pumped even today watching it if you saw it. Like, man, this is getting me really excited to watch this match. And as an 8-year-old, you're obviously just, you know, supercharged to watch it. And with Hogan and Flair, I mean, were you a big NWA WCW fan, Justin? Did you really think Ric Flair was a true world champion that was coming to unseat Hulk Hogan? Or did you know in the back of your mind that this was sort of a concoction?
I did not start really watching WCW until 92. So I knew of Ric Flair, and I knew it was a big deal that he was coming in. I'd say I bought into it. I did. I bought into it that it was a big deal. Maybe I wanted it to be. And being kind of a bit of a WWF homer, like I was kind of like, yeah, you know, we got your belt and your guy. So I kind of wanted it to be a big deal. I didn't want it to be like, oh, we got this another loser. Like, I thought it was cool that they took him. So, I bought into it.
And Scott, you the same?
I obviously remember Ric Flair. Obviously, I watched NWA in 85, 86, so Flair, obviously, we all know my feelings on Flair. But what pissed me off about that, Reesh, is that they ran Hogan Flair at house shows. And number two, they ran him at house shows in, like, Oakland, Salt Lake City. These absolutely ass-backwards house show spots for WWF, and the fans were kind of lukewarm. Well, those fans are lukewarm to begin with. They should never, ever have had those two meet in the ring before WrestleMania 8. Period. Period.
Yeah.
That's what they fucked up. Never should have had those merch house shows. Stupid
it must
idea.
Have been that sort of a screen testing format where he wanted to test it out to see how it would sell. And he took sampling from freaking house shows in the middle of the year where ticket sales are down. And
right,
they
exactly.
expected, okay, well, I guess nobody's going to watch it at WrestleMania. And I mean, they even had the graphic up there. I remember Mean Gene or Sean Mooney did it. And I remember seeing the graphic thinking, oh my God, it's going to be Ric Flair who just won the Royal Rumble and he's going to wrestle Hogan at WrestleMania.
Exactly.
And then it got sabotaged. And it was like, ugh. And I really loved the Savage Flair match. And I was okay with Hogan saying farewell and stuff like that. It all worked out well at WrestleMania 8. But I always felt like we sort of got cheated a little bit. That they weren't able to accomplish what they did with the Ultimate Challenge, because the Ultimate Challenge was belts of Vince McMahon's universe. It wasn't his. And he just could not accept the fact that the belt from another universe was going to be able to be considered an equal.
Right.
And it sort of kind of came full circle when the Invasion happened and y'all had a repost on your Vengeance shows, and that was really well detailed explanation of what happened at the time. And I felt the same way, that the WCW championship at that point had almost been completely nullified as something of significance. And then they redid it in 2002 with the brand split. And now that kind of leads to the other article that's coming out, where I took a lot of the other writers on the Place to Be staff, and we're going to do a submissions of our favorite title reigns of the brand split era. Because even though the writing has always been on the wall, I always liked the fact that Triple H got out there and really said, look, the brand extension is dead. Because we never... Justin, you know that that's been going on for the longest, but we never really heard it out of somebody's mouth that, look, SmackDown, Raw, the divide, the brand split, it doesn't exist. And for him to actually recognize that, I kind of found that a little bit interesting. So we're doing submissions of title reigns, especially specifically the World Heavyweight Championship, that people liked or were their favorites from the brand split era from 2002 to now. Just did you have a favorite title reign in the brand split?
No. I would say I mean, I always liked the back half of JBL's, probably from like the Taker feud on, the end of the Taker feud. I like his match with Booker T at Survivor Series. I like that foray at Armageddon. I feel like he was really starting to find his way. Remember, he had that... I feel like his big turning point was the show in Tokyo. Remember, he was drunk on the tranquilizer gun and everything, and he was stumbling around fighting Godzilla. And I think he was actually starting to really get it down and grow into the role, and then they took the belt off him. I still argue he should have retained at Mania and lost to Judgment Day in the I Quit match. I think he should have retained by DQ. And had more of a, you know, how the cabinet come in and all interfere and everything else. And I feel like that loss is buried and was a shitty loss. So how good how long his reign was and how much we went through just to have Cena kind of meander through. They either should have done Warrior Honky style where Cena just beat him in 3 seconds,
yeah,
or have JBL retain. Like, I feel like the 8-minute kind of blah fest we got really wasn't a nice blow off for what we had endured with that title reign. So that was one of my favorites. I liked Punk with the when he first turned heel, his feud with Jeff Hardy. I liked that one. And there was one other one I had in my head. I can forget. Oh, Edge. Edge's first one, even though it was only like 3 weeks. That was so cool when he won at New Year's Revolution and did the sex celebration,
funny.
Had the TLC,
yeah,
with Flair. So much happened in those 3 weeks that it felt so fresh at the time. It was such a change. Those are three off the top of my head that I really enjoyed.
That's funny because the one that I am going to write about, and it was probably my favorite, was when Edge was the World Heavyweight Champion going into WrestleMania 24. Because I felt like that was the last, you know, me and Brad went back and forth about this, but I feel like that was the last time the World Heavyweight Championship felt legitimate. Like, it felt like something that really mattered because it main evented WrestleMania. It had an angle behind it with Edge, Vicky, and his posse trying to keep The Undertaker and Batista and Rey Mysterio from taking the belt from him. Edge really held the belt dear. And I just felt like that was never, I never saw that again after Edge lost the belt, even with CM Punk and with all the other people that won the belt after that. Even when it went to Raw, it never felt that way. So, Scott, I don't think I have to even ask you a favorite, so we're just going to move on.
Actually, I have one that surprises you, believe it or not.
Oh, okay.
I actually liked the year-long run. Well, besides Punk's in from 11 to 13, that reign is epic. But I actually liked Cena's run from Unforgiven 06 until he got hurt in October 07. JR, when we were doing those 07 pay-per-views, I feel like because the World Heavyweight title was in flux because 5 million guys either got hurt or had bad livers, that his stability as WWE champion really helped the company. And he really had some good matches. He had good matches with Kali. He had good matches with Umaga. I liked the match with Lashley at the Bash. I kind of dug that reign. Yeah, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that reign. But then I liked Punk's. So, and yeah. Triple H in 2003. So you can continue.
You're an awful human being.
We'll get to that.
The one where they were, you know, Triple H actually brought that up in the interview, and he's like, well, you know, Michael Cole is saying, well, you know, they controversially, Eric Bischoff gave you that belt, like you didn't deserve it. What did you think? And Triple H goes, it was the best idea he ever had. I was like, yep, you're an asshole.
Now, what about Goldberg's reign? Because that was a fantastic one.
Yes, it was. Yep.
All one of them?
The fact that Triple H stole a Harley race storyline was even better.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's going to be really fun. Stephen Graham does one of the entries about the one that Justin liked the most that I think he really does a beautiful job on. Ben Morse, who everybody knows from Total Divas, doing Total Divas. He's going to
Don't spoil now. Don't tell us who they're doing.
There, I'm not gonna say who all of them are big of it. There's a lot of ones that really surprised me, and I didn't think that certain ones were going to get a lot of play, but when I realized people had certain convictions and I saw their entries, I said, wow, I never saw it that way. I didn't like JBL at all, but when Justin explains it and how much he liked it, I realized, man, people really enjoyed when JBL was the champion and when other guys really got a shot. You know, so I think people are going to be really intrigued by what they read when they see that one leading up to Justin's preview TLC, because I'm interested in Justin's pick because, or we just heard it, but I'm interested in reading the preview because I think this is about as 50-50 of a big-time title match I've seen in a really long time. I really don't know who's going to win this match.
It is a toss-up, and just to clarify, Scott's taking those over permanently after he had done Survivor Series. So he'll be doing the TLC preview this week, so
okay,
stay tuned for
clear.
That. But yeah, Risha's two pieces. The real world champion that was up already, you can see that on the website, and the one on the five count knockoff, Ben Moore steal of the favorite title reigns, that's coming up.
I ripped it off. I can't lie. I ripped it off.
Well, I got it coming too for a Christmas themed one, so it's okay. We're all hey, Ben gets full credit for all these. He brought the five count idea to us, and we've improved it for him. So
well, the Thanksgiving one turned out great. I mean, it was like a smorgasbord of Thanksgiving TV memories, and I was just laughing at it when I was at up at our little resort for Thanksgiving. I was just looking at, like, look at all these crazy shit that happened with Thanksgiving on TV.
Well, we got a couple coming. We're going to have a five count favorite Christmas movies, and we're going to do the TV memories as well, and wrestling Christmas memories. So we got a lot of Christmas stuff coming in a couple weeks. So check those out, and check out Scott's TLC preview, which should be up either tomorrow or Friday, I believe. So check out all that stuff. We have tons of TLC coverage for you, title unification and all the others. And also, as Andrew mentioned, we have our repost of the Vintage Vault. Just a portion of it. We just reposted our take on the Vengeance 2001, the three title matches to close the show. So those are reprinted there for you as well. Scott and Andrew, I want to take just a few minutes to preview Final Battle.
Mm-hmm.
Ring of Honor happening this Saturday, December 14th, in the Hammerstein Ballroom, Scott, where we were back in March or April. What time
April.
Was it? April?
April 5th.
Seems like forever
yep, April 5th.
Ago.
I know.
All right, I'm just going to go through the card really quick, do my picks, and just kind of what I think of the matchups here. Special challenge match, one I'm looking forward to, and that is Matt Hardy versus Adam Page. Page is a newcomer, signed a contract officially a couple months ago, and this is really his biggest match to date. I think the way Ring of Honor usually works, they don't usually put the young guy over like this. I think Hardy probably wins this, and they use it as a teaching moment for Page. That'd be my pick there. Strap match, Mark Briscoe versus my boy, the last real man, Silas Young. This should be a good one, probably. A lot of stiff strap shots, and I'm going to take Mark Briscoe there. Tag team attraction, the Young Bucks versus Adrenaline Rush, ACH and Tadarius Thomas. I like ACH and TD there. Special tag match, which I am looking forward to as well. Roderick Strong, who's been on fire as of late, has had a lot of great matches and kind of a renewed push and a renewed love from the crowd. He's teaming with Jay Lethal, and they were supposed to fight the American Wolves, but as we all know, Davey Richards is gone. He quit Ring of Honor, will not be at the show, so Eddie Edwards will have a mystery partner. I'm guessing Roderick and Jay Lethal go over because I feel like Roddy is getting, again, a bit of a renewed push, and I think Eddie's on his way out as well. So this is almost like the U.S. Express where Barry Windham just up and quit and Rotundo fulfilled the obligations. So it's Eddie maybe trying to stay in the good graces here.
Who do you think the mystery partner will be?
I don't know. Chad had mentioned maybe like Chris Hero, and then, maybe that was after the Pittsburgh show, Chad was talking about him. I've seen Chris Hero's name come up somewhere. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know. I'm not going to speculate because I have no idea. Mr. Wrestling Kevin Steen versus Michael Bennett. This feud's been going on for a while now. It's a stretcher match where the loser must stop using their pile driver. I think Bennett loses this. Bennett to me is an enigma. Like, he's someone that should be really good, but it just hasn't clicked yet for him. Like, there's just something missing. He's got an awesome valet in Maria. He's got a great look. He's got the size. He's a pretty good talker. But when he gets in the ring, his matches just don't seem to get to that next gear ever. So we'll see what kind of match he has with Steen. Tag team championship on the line. Red Dragon has had a hell of a run. And really one of the best tag teams of the year overall. Defending against Outlaw Inc., Homicide, and Eddie Kingston. Outlaw Inc. has been fantastic. Just a really... Scott, you would like these guys. Just a fucked up gimmick. They wear a clown mask and wig, and they're all fucking creepy.
Nice.
So I think they win this. I think they take the tag titles from Red Dragon. The whole story's been that Red Dragon's kind of been ignoring them and not really taking them seriously. So I think that's why Outlaw kind of catches him off guard and wins the titles. Matt Taven, who has broken the longevity record for Ring of Honor World TV Champion, faces the Sicilian psychopath Tommaso Ciampa. I want to say Taven retains and they keep this thing going, but it seems like they need a blow-off at this show. And I think Ciampa winning will really kind of cap his big comeback. He was out for the year with a major knee surgery, came back, and has been pretty good since his return. So I think he wins here and ends the run of Taven and Truth Martini. I've given Taven a hard time in my reviews. I feel like he's gotten better as of late. I want to see another good match out of him here. I feel like he's another guy that has all the tools that is still just trying to figure out a way to put it together. And in the main event for the ROH World Championship, Adam Cole defends against Unbreakable Michael Elgin and the self-proclaimed Mr. Reach, talking about real world champions, Jay Briscoe, claims he was never defeated. He was forced to forfeit the title into the tournament when he was injured. And now he's back. He has his own title. And I think Cole wins here. I think Cole pins Briscoe. Elgin needs to win at some point, and some point soon. I just think it's too soon to take the belt off Cole. But I think Briscoe eats the pin to put that to bed to end his claims to being the real world champion. And this almost legitimizes Cole. And it's kind of funny that in the same weekend, we're getting almost a kind of unifying title. Even though it's not a legit title that Briscoe has, he does have a claim that he's never been beaten. So,
and then at TNA, you got the exact same thing.
Kind of weird. Kind of weird going on. So there's a quick preview. Final battle. We'll talk about it. We'll have Kevin on next Wednesday so we can go through some of the results quick with him and his thoughts heading into Pittsburgh. And we're going to do a lot of hype for the Pittsburgh show, Scott, because, as you know, I'll be there along with Brad and Chad going now. That's a recent development. And a whole bunch of other crew from PTB Nation will be converging on Pittsburgh at the end of January. We all have tickets to the Rumble. We all have tickets to Ring of Honor. So we'll do a lot of hype heading into that show. We'll probably do a full preview with Kevin before that as well. So just wanted to hit on some Ring of Honor quickly. You can check out my recaps every week on PlaceTobeNation.com. The newest one went up today for last Saturday's show. So
love Jay Briscoe's belt. It's an awesome looking
belt.
It
is pretty cool. It is
love
cool.
The belt.
And he's they've taken an interesting tact with him where he's almost gone off the deep end. He's so obsessed with proving that he's a real world champion. He's all bitter and pissed off for having had to forfeit. So that's been kind of his gimmick.
That's actually a surprise. I heard nothing. I don't watch ROH at all, so I had heard nothing about that.
Well, I'm sure you read the recaps every week, Andrew Riesch.
Who writes them?
You son of a bitch. I need a break, Scott.
All right. When we come back, we'll talk a little BCS, a little NFL, any other three-letter leagues we could talk about as well. A break, though, because...
I hate you.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What I'd like to have right now.
Chad, do you ever feel that the world revolves around WWF?
I think you mean WWE there, Barf.
Yeah, whatever, but what about David Crockett?
He likes it! Well, what about Jimmy Valiant?
I'm gonna get y'all until I get you, Paul Jones.
Oh. The Four Horsemen.
We are a family, and we are the best.
The Omni, the Dangerous Alliance.
Please welcome the newest members of the Dangerous Alliance. I'm Anderson and Larry Zbysko.
Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express.
The Fantastics are putting the U.S. Tag Team title on the line against the Midnight Express.
Main events with actual work rate in them.
Woo! 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 All right!
It's just not fair to Flair.
It's not fair for Flair.
If this is what you're looking for, please check out Where the Big Boys Play podcast, the only pure NWA and WCW Supercard podcast out there.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunderlips, I was winning world titles.
Well, there they are, our good friends Chad and Parr, Where the Big Boys Play. Now, if you want nonstop old-school NWA discussion, getting back to that very first Starrcade, these guys have it covered. Even the PICs have made an appearance once. We are very particular what podcasts we visit. So check out our friends Chad and Parr, Where the Big Boys Play. Their link is right on our site, placetobenation.com. Just go into the podcast menu, and there they are, the other great shows we partner with. Chad and Parr, working Where the Big Boys Play. Speaking of Place to Be Nation, that's your everyday home for your pop culture needs. At placetobenation.com, we have everything. Wrestling, sports, comics, even polls. We want your opinions as well. Every day, there's something different with our top staff of writers who are experts in all fields of pop culture. From the weekly Raw review to the return of the hack, you've got everything you need. We're also working with a myriad of great podcasts, of course, besides Chad Parr. We have Grapple Talk, the fans podcast Off the Top Rope, Answering the 10 Count, We Found New Music, and The Kings of Sport with Nate Milton. We've got everything for your listening pleasure. So check us out every day of the week at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Now, don't forget about our good friend Graham Cawthon and the history of WWE.com. He's still the top source for all argument solvers, from match results to house show cards to pay-per-view histories. Any questions you need answered, any debates among wrestling fans that need ending, head over to Graham's treasure trove of information. You will certainly find it. Need to know what the opener of Starrcade 1995 was? What was the main event of that 1988 Boston Garden house show you went to when you were 11 years old? Graham can tell you. He has WWE, WCW, ECW results, and the growing results in TNA and Ring of Honor. So for all your wrestling research needs, check out Graham Cawthon at thehistoryofwwe.com. Now finally, if you want a place to just hang out, discuss all things wrestling with fellow diehard fans, check out the news and the great forums at twfnews.com. They have all the up-to-the-minute stories in WWE, TNA, and pretty much everywhere in between. They talk old school, Attitude Era, and even those hard-to-remember guys and shows like Waylon Mercy or In Your House Number 3. So check out all there is to see right on twfnews.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Christopher Daniels. I'm a national treasure, an idol to millions, and I've got the rear that makes the girls cheer. And you're listening to the Place to Be podcast. Please continue, because I'm great and so are you.
All right, Nation, we are back in the midst of our headline show. We did a full preview of TLC, talked a little bit about title unifications and the run we've had since the brand split, and also did a little Ring of Honor preview. Now we're going to talk some sports. We're going to get into some BCS, some college hoops, and some NFL picks. Before we do that, though, I just want to quickly talk placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Calum Leslie has an exclusive interview up with Joe Lauzon. Lauzon, one of the UFC's most exciting fighters, you'd think I would know. Fighting at home threw me off my game. That's the title of the piece. Calum gets some really interesting interviews, and this is a written piece. Check that out. Calum always gets these guys to open up, and of course, you know, he's had the big ones in the past as well with some controversial quotes he's gotten out of these different MMA fighters. And of course, there's a UFC Fight Night this week on Fox, and then December 28th is the next big pay-per-view as well, so we'll have full coverage heading into that. Vincent Vault repost, as I mentioned, Vengeance 2001. Scott and I look back at the three title matches to close out that show. Steve Rogers did a history of a rivalry, looking at the history of John Cena and Randy Orton. He went through all their matches they've had, all the singles matches they've squared off at, and kind of analyzed them and wrapped it all up for us heading into their biggest one to date. The Caliber Winfield Super Terrific Happy Hour went back and reviewed the great Spring Stampede 94. And that's an interesting read, Scott, because that is a show we'll be talking about in a few weeks, but we'll get to that. Mm-hmm. My Ring of Honor recap is up there. Andrew Risch's great piece on the real world champion, as he talked about earlier. Weber Has Issues, talking about Rocket Girl 1 and 2. A brand new Titans of Wrestling, Parv, Johnny, Pete, and Kelly, talk May, June, and July 1980, including a great Ken Patera versus Bob Backlund title match. And that's on the MSG DVD, Scott.
Yes. Yeah, super match.
And they break that one down. So that is a good listen if you saw that match. They really get into the match and the promo and all the build to that. So, and then that's a beast of a show, 3 hours. So plenty of entertainment there for you if you're into the old school WWF. Calum recapped the weekend that was in the world of UFC and MMA. A lot of big fights, a lot of big cards. And he kind of gives us a wrap. And there's some animated photos in there as well. GIFs, right? Not GIFs, right? It's GIFs. GIFs.
Yeah. GIFs.
I always get confused. I heard GIFs, and that didn't sound right. I'm pretty sure it's GIFs. And, of course, Scott's Raw recap from Monday night as well. So plenty more to come. The TLC preview will be up from Scott. Mr. Risch's five count on the greatest title reigns and plenty of other great articles, as always. Total Divas watching Total Divas will be up for the finale that was last weekend. And then as we head towards Christmas, tons of Christmas stuff and a lot of year-end material as well we're going to be doing. Some wrestling stuff that Chad's putting together is going to be a little bit unique from other sites, but it's going to be really good. We have our comic staff. We have our music staff putting together some year-end music pieces, too. So stick with us to the end of the year. We want to thank you for making 2013 a fantastic year here at placetobenation.com. And we look towards rolling it over to 2014 and keeping the ship chugging along. So I have been chugging along too much here. So I'm going to take a breather. I'm going to let Mr. Reish and Mr. Criscolo talk a little bit about the BCS, something I have no fucking clue about. They know a lot about it. They've written
Justin,
a lot about
I'm surprised you're not a college football fan at all.
I'm just not. It's not big up here. You know,
he's it's right.
Just,
it's not.
It's just, there's no team around here, so I just never really grew up into it. I don't know. I don't know what the full reasoning is. I will tell you that Scott, it looks like your defensive coordinator from Notre Dame will be the next UConn head coach.
Bob Diaco.
That
good
is
pick.
A rumor going on right now. So
good pick.
I'm gonna bow out. You guys have at it. Take the field.
All right, Mr. Reish. The BCS is set.
Yes, and it is the final. Thank God, the final bowl championship series.
Yes, it
and
is.
It's 15 or 16 year long shitsville that it's caused for every college football fan that has begged for this system to end, and it's finally coming to an end.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. And we got some huge games. What do you think overall the bowls as a whole this year? Like the schedule, the games don't really blow me away. Like there's some matchups. I think people really have to look deep for the good games. They may not be sexy when you stare at them, but
now when you say that, do you mean the BCS or just the entire bowl schedule?
No, anything. The whole bowl schedule.
Okay.
Everything. Before
I
we
got
get
you.
To the BCS specifics. Like one game I really like but may not look good on paper is the Royal Purple Las Vegas Bowl, where 20th ranked Fresno State takes on number 25 USC, which is Ed Orgeron's out game.
That's a really even matchup because Fresno State was basically undefeated up to the point where they lost to a San Jose State team that's got an NFL quarterback named David Fales.
Yes.
And they lost like 60 something to 50 something.
It was 49-44. Two at the half. That game was on our narrative, the CBS, on my client. CBS
USC lost a little bit of air because they got blown out at the end of the year by UCLA. But leading up to that point, they were playing hot under Ed Orgeron because they had just beaten Stanford on a field goal.
Yes.
And now Ed O has quit because Sarkisian got the job and Orgeron didn't. So that's going to be a really unique matchup. I think that's going to be a good one. I agree with that.
Another fun game. You can see all the games on all the different websites. I just want to point out a couple. The Russell Athletic Bowl on the 28th, Miami and Louisville. I think that's going to be a fun game, too. I think this is where Al Golden turns a corner for the Canes. I think they win this game big.
Who's in the Sugar Tits Bowl?
Derek LaRue, Matt Rotella.
Oh.
In a bowl of Jell-O.
It's Mel Gibson and alcohol.
I like Teddy Bridgewater. I think this is obviously his audition game for the NFL. Mm-hmm. I like the Canes, though.
It's battle of the NFL quarterbacks that might not be NFL quarterbacks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Water versus
a bunch of those.
They're nice. They didn't do anything terribly impressive in the regular season, even though everybody was waiting for it to happen. But Louisville's really good. If they had just not blown a big lead to UCF, they would have been undefeated, and people would have tried to make a case that they should have played for the national championship.
Right.
So they were very, very close to being an elite team had they not lost one game. That's why college football and having a BCS where only two guys get in is so fucking stupid. But and thank God it's over again. Mm-hmm. And Miami's a good team. They've had NFL talent go through there. Duke Johnson's an awesome running back. Louisville's got a lot of receivers and a lot of seniors on defense. That'll be a really nice matchup. I'm looking at the schedule. And one of them that I like locally, just because it's two Louisiana schools, it's the New Orleans Bowl between Tulane and Louisiana Lafayette. Mark Hudspeth, I guarantee you, will get a head coaching job up somewhere else in about the next 2 weeks. But they've won the last two New Orleans R&L Carrier Bowl games, and Tulane has not played in a bowl game since 2002, and they play in the Superdome, which is their home stadium. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking here. Virginia Tech, UCLA, Vern and Gary on CBS are going to do that game in the Sun Bowl in El Paso. That'll be a nice game. It's straight up defense versus offense. Ole Miss and Georgia Tech, Music City Bowl. That has potential to be a shootout.
Mm.
And it's going to be interesting to see if Mac Brown coaches that last game. I don't think he's going to in the Alamo Bowl against
Oregon.
He'll
be gone Friday. I think he's gone Friday.
Yeah, and that's all the Saban talk. Don't want to spill too many magic beans on Greg Phillips' head, but you know, you got all the Saban going on with Texas. But
here's my prediction.
What's
Here's
that?
My prediction. My prediction. The next coach of the Texas Longhorns is Jimbo Fisher.
No way. No way. Not with the title on the line.
Nope. I think it's his out. It's his the final line of his resume, and then he heads to Nick Saban is not leaving Tuscaloosa.
You remember when Eddie Guerrero had to wrestle Chavo, but he had to give up his Royal Rumble spot?
Mm-hmm.
That would be the situation Jimbo Fisher's in. Jimbo, do you want to go coach a Texas team that's underachieved for 3 years, or do you want to play for the national championship?
No, he's not going to leave. He's not going to leave before the game.
No, man, we were so close to this happening in 2007 with Rich Rod.
Yeah.
You know, he had beaten Pitt. They would have been able to play for the national championship in the Superdome against God knows whoever it was going to be. That was such a weak year. Mm. And they were going to be able to play, and Rich Rod was going to probably leave for Michigan or some other big school because someone was going to hire him. And he would have had the opportunity to be an interim head coach trying to win a national championship.
Yeah.
Kind of like Dennis Erickson when he was about to leave for the Seahawks. So
that's right.
There's just Texas A&M, Duke, Chick-fil-A Bowl. Really love that matchup. I think that'll be crazy.
I think A&M throttles them. I think Duke's overrated.
Well, it's Johnny's last game.
I like David Cutcliffe. I think he's a good coach, but I think Duke's overrated. Let's take a quick look at the actual BCS. Oh, and are you pissed off, just like Chad Campbell, that we got to see Nebraska and Georgia for the second year in a row?
Well, Nick Duke, one of the hard-traveling fanboys, he's a Georgia fanatic.
Yes, and he
seemed a little bit reserved. He wasn't too upset with it because he thinks the bowl system outside of really the national championship game is kind of contrived and doesn't really matter. But, I do understand that. You know, a lot of people don't like that. I remember when Nebraska played – I think it was Washington, and they had played earlier in the year, and Nebraska blew them out, and then they played again, and everyone was like, oh, come on. You know Washington's going to get killed by Nebraska. And Washington actually won the game,
and
it turned out to be an okay game. So maybe it actually turns out decent. Lord knows. You know, Tigers, the LSU Tigers, they play
Iowa. They're going to blow Iowa out.
Man, less is less. You just don't know. And Anthony –
And Denberger's not playing, so –
yeah.
So, all right, let's take a quick look at the actual BCS games. There's five total. We'll get to national championship last.
Okay.
I don't like. There's only one of these matchups I like, and that's the one in Pasadena. Number five, Stanford. Number four, Michigan State in the Rose Bowl. Love this game. It's the only, like, bar brawl fist fight game in the whole bowl season. Love David Shaw. Love the way he runs a team. Love the way he runs an offense. I like the Cardinal in this game. What do you think?
Well, you know how they say the unstoppable force versus the immovable object? This is the immovable object versus the other immovable object.
Yes.
I mean, Cook played great in that Ohio State game, but if you've seen Ohio State in the last two games, their defense is really suspect.
It's putrid. Yeah.
I do not know how good Michigan State's offense really is. They're going to get a massive challenge from Stanford, the only Pac-12 team that plays defense, and that is the reason why they've been so good the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. So they barely squeezed out a win against Wisconsin, and Wisconsin really wasn't that good that year, and I want to see how good they are against a Michigan State team who's got a lot of NFL-level guys on the defensive end, especially in the secondary. So.
Right.
Man, I'll go with the strength on the front line, and I'll go with Stanford by a touchdown.
Okay,
but it's going to be 17. It's going to be something close. It's going to be like 24-21.
Yeah, I think so too.
My favorite is the Orange Bowl. I like Clemson and Ohio State because
I think it's going to be a fun game. I like that game too.
It's the Enabler Bowl. It's like when Baylor played Washington, and it's like, hey, you want to have a shootout? Hey, we love shootouts too. Okay, yes. Let's just have a giant shootout. And that's what I think it's going to be.
I like Clemson. I think Taj Boyd kind of punches his ticket. I think he's a top 15 pick in the draft. He's got the size. He's got the arm. But Clemson just can never beat Florida State and South Carolina. So they beat
LSU in that really great Chick-fil-A Bowl where in the fourth quarter you could tell Clemson – it was the first time I've ever seen a Clemson team that was just so desperate to win and played about as hard as they could. Yeah. I want to see if they can replicate that against Ohio State if it winds up that they have to come back and kind of take it away from Urban Meyer's hands. And we really just haven't seen Ohio State play too many elite teams, you know. So we're gonna really see what they're made of now. We're gonna see two games in a row now.
Yeah, it's kind of fitting because this was Woody Hayes' last game. Remember, it was Clemson with which he punched that poor defenseless linebacker in the face in 1978. So these two games are both going to be unwatchable dogs. In Glendale at the Fiesta Bowl, I think Art Briles is going to dial up the meter like you've never seen it dialed up before, and I think they crush Central Florida. I like George O'Leary, and I like the Knights, but they have no chance in hell to win in this game. I think Baylor racks up 70 points in this game. I really do.
Mark May agrees with you. He said that they lose by 3 touchdowns.
I think they lose by 7.
I take that back. He said 30 points.
They lose by 30 points.
I agree. I've watched UCF a little bit. Brian Bortles, I think, is the name of the quarterback. Really good quarterback, big man. He can run just a little bit. And the only loss they had, they lost to South Carolina by 3 at home. So they played at least one really good team, actually two, because they beat Louisville. Mm-hmm. So, man, I'm not ready to say that just yet. I might be totally wrong, and you're totally right. And Baylor scores like 50 points on him. But I think I just got a weird, weird feeling, Scott, that I think that game might be close. It might turn into an easy game.
Could Central Florida be the Boise State of 2000? What was the Statue of Liberty year? 2008?
2006.
2006. Wow, that long ago? Jesus.
We're about to buzz through that really fast. But it's been a while.
And
it just shows how many times. It just shows how many great things have happened in the BCS. When you look back on one and say, "Oh wow, that was like really long ago."
I know. And of course, the other game in your backyard. I really have a lot, and I don't dislike Bob Stoops by any stretch. I think he's a fine coach. I feel bad for him.
Yeah.
Because forget the Texas job, forget any of this other shit. Nick Saban's going to go into that game. AJ McCarron's last game. TJ Yeldon's last game. They are not calling off the dogs. They are going to annihilate Oklahoma. Alabama is not going to have any sympathy in this game. And they're going to go in there and they are going to absolutely murder Oklahoma.
Here's the thing. Historically, I've seen two type of Nick Saban Alabama teams going into bowl games and both coming off of losses. I saw one in 2008. They were undefeated and they lost to Florida. They go to the Sugar Bowl. Andre Smith gets suspended. They play a Utah team that's really good. They had Paul Kruger, Sean Smith, Brian Johnson was the quarterback. And they just blitzed them from the beginning and got out to an early lead, and Alabama never recovered. They looked like it was like Florida and Louisville last year in the Sugar Bowl. It looked like they just didn't want to be there.
Yep.
Then I saw what's that?
I don't think that happens again. But go ahead. Do you have the other Nick Saban team?
And that's the thing. I saw Alabama play Michigan State in 2010 in the Capital One Bowl after they had just lost to Cam Newton in Auburn, and they were fucking angry. And they took it out bad on Michigan State. I think they beat them 49-7.
I think that's happened here, too.
Was that? Yeah.
Happens again, too.
I think it's going to be Swooner Sooner. I think it's going to be a lot.
JR, I'll be crying.
We could just put that West Virginia Fiesta Bowl GIF back in there with JR and his little hanging hat.
GIF. All right.
Yeah.
January 6th.
Yeah.
In the Rose Bowl. Let's finish it up right here. Tigers, Noles. Give me a minute. 60 seconds. Go.
I got to go with the best player on the field. And even though Auburn's been touched by God for the last month, I'm going to have to go against destiny for once in my life, and I'll go with Florida State, even though it pains me, because even though I hate Auburn and I grew up as an LSU fan despising them, it is hard for me to choose against SEC. Scott, you're a Notre Dame fan, so you were an independent. You didn't have that conference alignment.
No.
It is hard for me to go against SEC when you're that clung on to their history and how good they've been in the BCS for the last 7 years, and have to say, no, they can't. So, but I'll say it. No, Auburn can't win.
Okay. Two things for me. Number one, I love Gus Malzahn. I think he's a fantastic coach. I liked him at Arkansas State. Great coach there as well. By the way, did you realize this, Reach, quickly? 3 straight years, Arkansas State has had one and done.
Brian Harrison goes to Boise
State. Boise State.
And then before Gus, you freeze.
You freeze. So, yep.
So Saw it needs to stop being so good.
I know. I don't think we talk about Jameis Winston, who's a fantastic player, and we talk about Marshall, who I think is a great player, and Trey Mason, who's just a workhorse.
Yeah. Got invited to the Heisman Trophy ceremony.
Good for him. He's not going to win, but good for him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that we're talking enough about Florida State's defense, which really wasn't tested. They were tested about as much as Ohio State's defense was tested. Other than Clemson, how many real high-powered offenses were there in the ACC? Not many, to be honest with you.
One that was Andre Williams at Boston College.
At Boston College,
that was it.
And you're not gonna beat a team like Boston College with a great running back. You know what I mean? You know they throttle. I mean the rest of that conference is crap. I'm sorry.
They had a weaker SOS strength of schedule than Ohio State did.
Yeah.
The difference was Florida State looked so much better than the ACC opponents, while Ohio State had to kind of like come along a little bit every game until the very end where they cracked. But Florida State has just destroyed. The only game I saw with them that was even remotely close was Boston College. Mm-hmm. But the defense is incredibly good. I have counted at least five guys or six guys that will probably play in the NFL at the end of the day on the defensive side. This after they lost seven starters to the NFL and their defensive coordinator last year, which is incredible. But we're going to see how good they are against Auburn's the jet sweep and the little read option that they do. It's tough to stop. So it's going to be really, really interesting.
I don't want to see the SEC win another national championship.
Go to hell.
I know. But I'm going to pick Auburn. I think it's going to be an upset. I think Winston's going to make a freshman mistake, and it's going to cost him. So, all right, quickly, 2 seconds, 15 seconds before we bring Justin back. Who wins a Heisman?
Oh, Jameis. Famous Jameis.
A.J. McCarron.
I think even with the charge, he still would have won.
A.J. McCarron? I think he's finally earned it. He didn't lose that game. His stupid coach and his shitty play calling lost that game. He didn't lose that game.
The problem is that no matter what, A.J. McCarron will never be seen as the best player on his team.
But he's an NFL quarterback.
Oh, yes, absolutely. He's a better quarterback than Greg McElroy and John Parker Wilson. I think he'll probably start on an NFL team.
Speaking of guys that have a Greg McElroy jersey, you can JR, are you back?
Let me ask you this, Justin. I have to ask you this because it's kind of similar.
Why?
You're back. When the Patriots went to the Super Bowl in 2 years ago.
Why are we – what? Go ahead.
When the Patriots played in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, now they played a team that you hated, the Giants, but because they were in your division and they were an AFC champion, did you somewhat subconsciously cheer for the Patriots in any way whatsoever? Or is that against fans?
There's your answer.
Never.
He didn't hate the Giants. He hated the fans at the time.
My dad wanted to kill
me. Yeah, Giants fans were getting annoying because they were getting a little too cocky. I didn't really like their derisiveness, but I would never. There's not one team in the league I would root the Patriots over.
Well, my dad and I had a long talk about this, and we were saying, well, should we cheer for Auburn because they're from the SEC and want them to get in? My dad is on the no camp. No. No. And he said, no, you can't cheer for Auburn. I mean, would you agree with that, or would you say cheer for your conference, cheer for your representation?
No. I think it's – I agree with your dad. Sorry.
Yeah, if it's a direct rival, I mean –
You're not my dad.
Well, you don't know if you could be. You don't really benefit from your conference winning. I mean, I don't know. Do you have like SEC shirts that is like conference pride? I mean, you don't work for the conference, right? So it's. I mean,
no, but you got to understand.
Like, I don't care if the AFC wins. That means nothing to me. Or like the American League. If the American League win, like the Red Sox winning, did not make me feel warm and fuzzy this year because an American League East team won.
I think it's the SEC embargo that kind of everybody kind of keeps close to them down here that they want. The South is so proud of their football.
No, there is one exception. This year with the Big East and basketball, and we can transition with this. I feel like it's a pretty big year for them, so I will be rooting for any and all Big East teams.
Ye
will
me too.
You cheer for the American Conference?
No.
Nah.
No, them I do not like. But anyone in the Big East I will root for come tournament time or whatever else. Except when they're playing Providence, I will root for them in all these non-conference games, everything else. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's a big couple years here for the Big East to kind of establish themselves as a good conference. So I will. That is one time I will put the conference needs over any kind of rivalry.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Why don't you just give us a couple quick minutes, Andrew, on your kind of big stories and maybe shocking teams in college hoops.
I'm going to keep it very brief because we really haven't seen a lot yet. the overall with college hoops, the only thing that we've seen that's been really dramatic in terms of change is that they have been emphasizing the new rules with touch fouls and chucking cutters and hand checks and such like that. And if you look at the stats, the scoring in terms of team average is up. It is early, so you're beating on lesser teams, so it might be inflating the numbers. But if you look at the real numbers, the games in terms of pace have kind of been the same as always. Free throws are way up. A lot of people going marching to the free throw line in the last 10 minutes. Three-point shooting is up, so a lot of people are basically just taking bad jump shots off of crappy possessions. So it's the same old college basketball. Folks, you're not missing anything different. It's just a little bit more scoring because they're encouraging free throw shooting now with the referees. With the big teams, everybody's got a weakness. You know, Andrew Wiggins, he finally had a big game against Florida in a loss, but he's been a little bit up and down. Jabari Parker's great, but Duke can't play defense. The Big Ten is a little bit down compared to last year when they had a bunch of great teams. The Big East is no more. You got the American Conference and the Big East, and both conferences have their own little down periods there. And you've got I'm looking here. You got the Big 12, which is really good at the top, and I think that's the conference to really watch because you got Kansas.
Well, Kansas had three straight losses, right?
Yeah, but listen, Michigan State and Louisville, when Denny Crum was there, they were famous for this. They would challenge themselves early, get to conference play, they would be ready to go for the tournament. So you got to be – it's like Scott says with the big picture with Cena. You can't look in the moment. You got to look at the big picture and see what is Kansas going to be at their best, just like Kentucky after they lost to Baylor. Oh, no, what's wrong with Kentucky? Don't worry. You got to look at them when they're at their best. They're going to be really, really good once you get to March. And so, yeah, Kansas has some issues. They got to work some stuff out. You know, Oklahoma State's got Marcus Smart. He's amazing. He's probably going to be top three in the NBA draft. Iowa State is my favorite team to watch. They're a three-point shooting team. Fred Hoiberg is the head coach. And I'm trying to remember the other team that I really liked in that. Baylor, I mentioned. And then Oklahoma was another team that I saw that I really liked. That's the team to watch. That's my dark horse. And the super-duper ACC that was supposed to take over the world is not really that great this year. Outside of Syracuse, which is an import from the Big East, we really haven't seen the ACC really take over college basketball like everyone thought it would yet. They still haven't gained Louisville. Louisville comes next year. But right now, just a little bit of weakness across the board, a lot of parity, which is what makes college basketball great. So It's been nice. It's been nice college basketball. We just haven't seen too much epicness yet.
What do you think of Arizona?
Arizona's awesome. They got a great defense. Aaron Gordon is in the perfect spot as a player who is a really good super freshman, but he doesn't have to do everything. And he's not expected to. He's just a guy that has to come in, be a help defender, block shots, get easy dunks, feed the ball back to the guard if he gets double teamed. He's a perfect Sean Miller player. Sean Miller came from Xavier. He was taught by Thad Matta. He is just a blue collar guy, but he's really good at recruiting. I'm planning on writing something about him just to kind of break a tease for the next year, but for a coach's piece that I'm going to write about college basketball all for 1 week in the next year. I haven't even told Brad that. But I think Sean Miller is really smart. I think that is the next Pac-12 team to really have a chance to win the national title because we haven't seen one in a while since Kevin Love was at UCLA.
I see.
All right. Well, we'll have you on as we get closer. And, of course, already, Scott, we've scheduled all the way out to March on the show here. Mm. We already have the March Madness preview on the books.
It's there coming.
Our fourth, right?
2011, 12. Yeah, this will be our fourth.
Crazy.
Yep.
Yeah. You've been here for all of them.
It'll be me, Chris, and Scott while Justin sleeps with this child again.
While Matt
Matt might be sleeping with
this. Incoherently.
Bumbling something else, yeah.
All right, NFL picks. Let's get through these, and then we'll go ahead and wrap things up. Thursday night, Denver Broncos at home against the San Diego Chargers. Wes Welker out with a concussion. Don't think it'll matter. I think San Diego makes a little bit of a shootout, but it could be the Thursday night curse as well. Maybe we actually get a low-scoring game out of Denver. We'll see. I will take the Broncos at home, Mr. Scott.
I as well.
Mr. Reich.
What's the game again? I totally lost track.
You son of a fucking bitch. Denver at home for the Chargers.
Oh, man. Denver's at home. I wonder. Oh, Denver.
Okay. Atlanta Falcons stumbling towards a draft pick at home against the Washington Redskins, stumbling towards St. Louis's top draft pick that, of course, they own from the RG3 trade. RG3 inactive this week and for the rest of the season. Kirk Cousins will start. Mike Shanahan's gone off the deep end. He's like George Costanza hitting his way out of the Redskins organization.
Is RG3 hurt? Or
no.
I didn't get full news.
No, that is there. It was Shanahan's decision, apparently. I don't know if they want to show off Cousins or what, but they decided to make RG3 inactive.
He's already being fired, but that's really dumb.
He is definitely dumb and done. I'll take the Falcons here at home. I think Washington is just a train wreck.
I agree. Go Falcons.
I never cheer for the Falcons, so go Redskins.
All right, interesting game here. Chicago. We should learn tomorrow if Jay Cutler is going to be back or if they're going to stick with Josh McCown. They've said if Cutler's 100%, he's going to play. We'll see if they announce that he's 100%, though. It's hard to see them going away from McCown. He's been one of the best starters in the year of the league since he came in during the year later into the season. I'm going to take the Bears down the road, but Cleveland's frisky. They choked away a very, very winnable game against the Patriots.
Stolen.
It was stolen. Awful call. But still, how do you give up that onside kick? So the Browns at home.
They didn't give it up. He touched it. He touched it before it went 10 yards.
Guskowski?
Yeah. Watch it. You have 45,000 cameras in that fucking stadium, and you can't see the guy touch the ball because someone's in the way.
Boo.
Well, I thought they were screwed more on the
I'm still
that
mad.
Bullshit
I'm
pass
still
interference.
Mad. I'm a Saints fan. I'm still mad about that finish in September or October. It's still, ooh, it irks me when they lost.
Oh, I remember that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I like the Bears.
I'll take the Bears here, but the Browns have a good pass D, and I wouldn't. I mean, this is a big game for the Bears. They need this win to stay in line with the Lions in that division. So it'll be a close one, but I'll take the Bears too. Rich.
Bears.
All right, Colts. Who have not been the most impressive team, but they've locked up that division just because the rest of the division fucking blows. Welcome in the reeling Texans. I'll take the Colts here at home.
Go Colts.
I got to think of the Colts. I just hope this time Kubiak doesn't have a heart attack at his house.
Okay. He's not coaching anyway. Oh, at his house. Okay.
New England Patriots go into their little personal shop of horrors down in Miami. Brady always seems to struggle down there. I'm going with the upset here. I'm taking Miami on the road at home. The Pats on the road have not looked strong, and one of these days they're going to fall behind and not come back, and I feel like it's coming. This is really a must-win for Miami if they want to keep hold of that sixth spot in the playoff race, so I will take the Dolphins.
I'm going to take Miami, too.
Andrew?
Wait, who does Miami play?
Oh, all right. Me and Scott are going to do this. Go take a break.
Yeah, you're done. Goodbye.
All right, Philadelphia, Scott, at Minnesota. AP is trying to fight his way back into the lineup. We'll see if they start him or not. I'm going to take the Eagles here. Nick Foles is going to destroy this defense.
Yeah, I'd rather the Eagles just take the division now so I don't have to deal with watching the Week 17 shitstorm that's coming, so I'm going to take the Eagles.
You know what's going to happen. Eagles will win this week. You're going to win this week. And then next week, you'll win. They'll lose, and you'll be tied.
Yep. And then we'll play, and then we'll get fucking killed because we're playing the Redskins next week. So, all right, I like the Eagles here.
All right, Seattle at the Giants. I will take the Seahawks.
The team's going to be horrendous.
The Giants are a mess.
Feel bad
this
for
is the
Fox
game they fucking
numbers.
This is the game they fucking win, right? The Giants just to annoy everyone in the world.
Yeah. No. Fuck them. I like the Seahawks.
Okay. Me too. San Francisco at Tampa. By the way, this is a really bad slate of games this week. There are not very many good games. I will take the Niners at Tampa.
I like the Niners.
Well, Tampa's been playing well. I mean, they're not playing well enough to beat the Niners, but I'll give them some credit. They look dead in the water, and now they've won 4 out of 5. So, Speaking of winning 4 out of 5, Scott, the Jacksonville Jaguars actually have a very good chance of finishing in second place in that division.
Oh, God, that's
if you
terrible.
Can believe it. Winning 4 of the last 5, playing well, not giving up. They're at home for Buffalo, and I think they win again because EJ Manuel has not looked good since he's returned. Nah. Buffalo's kind of a hot mess, and I'll take the Jags.
Hot mess. It's going to be the name of your autobiography. Yes, I'll take the Jags as well, actually.
Your face is a hot mess. All right, Kansas City at Oakland. Smells like a little bit of an upset game, but I think KC just was so fucking dominant in Washington, and Oakland just got torched by the Jets. So I think the Chiefs have a big day. I think Jamal Charles runs like 600 yards in this one.
Yes, I like the Chiefs.
Carolina at home for the Jets. The way the season has gone, this has Jets
Justin,
win.
Justin, your team better not let me down. I need this.
Oh, they're going to.
You? Go away.
Carolina's going to win. But if there's any game the Jets have a chance, it's this one, just the way the season has gone. So I wouldn't be surprised if they win this and then lose to the Browns next week. But I will take Carolina. That is overall better.
Yeah. Reach, I think Elon's on or something. Why don't you watch him? I'm going to take – I like the Panthers as well. I think they rebound from last week.
All right, the Cowboys home for Green Bay. Looked like Aaron Rodgers was maybe going to make it back, and now it does not look it at all. So I will take the Cowboys at home over the porous Green Bay Packers.
You're porous. Packers are porous. This game's got like
– look, if you give up 500 yards of offense to Matt Flynn, you might as well just fold up shop.
Well, yeah, well, it's probably going to happen. I think to talk about what Rich and I were saying earlier, this game's going to kind of be like that San Jose State, Fresno State game where it was 44-40 at the half or whatever. Now, the Cowboys need to win this game if they have any sense of anything. They need to win at home, and I think they will.
Arizona at Tennessee. Arizona still alive in that playoff hunt, but I like Tennessee in the upset here at home. I think they rebound. They actually played the Broncos pretty well. They have a good pass defense. I could see this being a multi-pick game for Carson Palmer.
Well, the Honey Badger's out for the year, which hurts the Cardinals' secondary. I'm going to take the Titans, too.
All right. Andrew Reach's New Orleans Saints go into the St. Louis, what the fuck, TWA Dome? Is that still
Jones.
TWA? Yeah,
Edward Jones? No, it's Edward Jones. The Edward Jones Dome. TWA.
The TWA Dome.
TWA!
And the Saints will march all over the Rams.
Yeah, Saints win here.
Reach?
Let me.
Wait, who's this? Wait,
it's the privateers of the University of New Orleans.
I've got to pause the Elon game. Hold on a second. But I'll tell you this: as an omen, 2 years ago they went 13-3, and they played the Rams in the middle of October and got smacked. A really bad Rams team. So I'm scared, but I'll still take this.
Nah, they'll win this game.
All right, I'm taking the Steelers at home. The Bengals do not play well on the road. They look like the greatest team of all time when they're at home. They usually follow up big wins with stinker losses, so I'll take Pittsburgh here to kind of throw a chink in the Bengal armor. The Bengals really were very close to locking up a bye, or at least getting the inside track to a bye. If the Patriots would have lost that game to the Browns on Sunday, the Bengals would have had the 2 seed. But as it is right now, they're still 1 game back, and I think they fall 2 back here. Well, I think they remain 1, because I think Miami wins, and I think Pittsburgh wins.
Yeah, I like the Steelers too, actually.
Detroit at home for Baltimore. Detroit's been very disappointing. If they don't win this division, Schwartz will be fired immediately. They've been challenged by Matt Flynn, Scott Tolzien, Josh McCown. I mean, they should not be tied right now and only have the Green Bay a half game behind them. But they do. Baltimore's playing well as two. They had kind of a crazy win over Minnesota at home, where it was like 5 touchdowns in the last 2 minutes or something bananas. I will take the Lions at home here, though.
Me too.
All right, there's your NFL predictions. A big upset in the world of college basketball tonight, at least I think so. Notre Dame lost to North Dakota State, Andrew.
I was keeping track of that. Now, that is also a team that in Division II football is undefeated, and their head coach is rumored to take one of the lower-end college football jobs. So that's I think that's the Bison, am I right?
No, is that that's not the Jackrabbits, is it?
No, South Dakota State, I think, right, is the Jackrabbits. North Dakota State is the Bison. So I think they played, they either played in the tournament last year or they lost to South Dakota State in the conference finals. So that's not a bad team. And Notre Dame lost earlier to Indiana State this year. So Mike Bray's got a little bit of work to do. Sorry, Scott.
No, I agree. Mike Bray's one of those guys, and I like Mike Bray a lot. I think he's a good coach, but Notre Dame's one of those teams that they'll be kind of in the muck for a couple months, and then like early February you'll see them go on a, you know, win 15 out of 16 run and look kind of hot going into the tournament, and then they'll lose in the first round.
They've never had that one great player since Chris Thomas left. They just haven't had that one guy to go to.
Yeah,
and I think that's hurt them for many, many years.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. There it is. Also in the baseball rumor mill, the Yankees turned down a Brett Gardner for Brandon Phillips trade with Cincinnati.
Really?
Yes.
Really? And the Mets added to their rotation, signing Bartolo Colon. Jay Horowitz will have to be filling up that catering table. Bartolo Colon, 2 years, $20 million. And Pirates, Rays, I don't remember the third team. Pirates, Rays, and somebody have interest in Ike Davis. I don't know what they'll get for him, but.
Well, now that Corey Hart is gone, Ike's probably the next to go, so. All right, there you have it. That is your headline show. I want to thank Mr. Andrew Reach for joining us. It was a lot of fun. Catching up with you, sir. And, of course, you can read thousands and thousands of words of his at placemination.com. Scott, Monday night, We have Mr. Brian Shields, Mr. Steve Willey back with us. We're going to talk kind of wacky and crazy gimmicks and memories throughout wrestling history, right up Brian and Steve's alleys. Wednesday, Kevin Kelly talking the first half of 2001 WWF, as well as recapping Ring of Honor's final battle. And the week after will be our Christmas Spectacular. That'll be on the 23rd. That'll be our only show that week. And then we close out the year on December 30th with a list of mania, all-time pay-per-view cards, March and April. Like we did a few weeks ago, we did January, February. We'll be doing March, April. And then we have a big show planned for the beginning of January.
Is Uncensored 2000 in there?
We're going to have a big show set for the first one of January. We'll get to that
can't wait.
As we get closer. So I can't wait for the show, Dan. So let's go ahead and wrap things up for Andrew Reich and Scott Grisgolo. I am Justin Rosero, PP Nation. Have a tremendous weekend. Enjoy all the great wrestling, all the great sports going on. We'll check back with you Monday night with Brian and Steve and without Andrew. Take care of them.
Andrew Reich, the John Rothstein of the South.
I liked it better when you were Andrew Ritchie. We had no idea who the fuck you were in the first season.
There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago. It's the most wonderful time of the year. There'll be much mistletoeing and hearts will be glowing when loved ones are near. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago. It's the most wonderful time of the year. There'll be much mistletoeing and hearts will be glowing when loved ones are near. It's the most wonderful time. Yes, the most wonderful time. Oh, the most wonderful time.